BisonReport.com radio podcast. I am publisher Ryan Burns, and joining me, as always, is one of the best minds in all of NDSU athletics, Mr. Ross Uglum. Ross, how are you feeling after that ass-kicking, I'll even say, of Western Illinois on Saturday?
Well, it was, you know, a fun atmosphere. Obviously, you know, it was kind of like the boys went off to war and grabbed two important road victories, and they came home heroes. And obviously the biggest hero was the season savior freshman quarterback Easton Stick. That was a fun atmosphere to be around, fun game to cover. Obviously the press conferences both on Saturday and Monday were jovial sort, which is, you know, always easier to deal with people after a win. Not that anybody, you know, in the athletic department's ever inconsiderate, but everybody's always in a better mood after a win, so it was a good weekend and a fun time to be around Bison Athletics.
I know in our preview podcast you predicted a pretty large sum. I think it was an 18 to 21 point victory for the Bison, but damn, I mean 59 points on this team and 38-0 at halftime. I mean, what can you say about this performance from this Bison team?
Well, I had a lot of faith in the defense, and the score that you're talking about was 28-10. You guys can go back and look at that in the game preview on BisonReport.com. But I just didn't feel like this team was really going to be able to move the ball. Very conventional in how they go about doing things. If they're going to throw, you kind of know they're in the shotgun. They're trying to spread you out. And if they're going to run, they hand it off to a really, really big tailback with almost no threat of a quarterback run. And as soon as you give that Bison run defense, you know, one read or one fit that they have to get into, life becomes really, really difficult, and it absolutely did. Western was not able to move the ball. They weren't able to score. In fact, they tied themselves, basically. They gave up six, and they scored six. The quarterback, Trenton Norvell, threw a pick six to Pierre G. Tucker in the first quarter that effectively ended the game. I mean, it was all downhill for Western after that. What I didn't see, what you didn't see, what I don't think anybody really saw, was 52 points from the offense and 59 points from the team. That's an offensive explosion that we haven't seen yet this year. And considering, you know, how you and I have talked about this Western game as being so important over the last, basically since the South Dakota loss, looking forward, this Western game was a huge deal. That to have it be utterly non-competitive, I think, was very, very surprising. And obviously, if you're a Bison fan, it was extremely encouraging.
You know, what also was very encouraging was Easton Stick in the first half throwing four touchdown passes. Obviously, the first one to Zach Roth, all over SportsCenter. We'll come back to that, but Easton was very impressive, and he came out knowing, as the rest of this Bison team did, that this was a must-win game, and he put on a show.
He really did. Obviously, he's been extremely impressive running the ball, over 100 yards in both of the last two games. He even accomplished that feat before halftime in last week's game against Southern Illinois, but it was time for them to prove that he could throw the ball, and not just to fill up the stat sheet, but honestly to keep defenses honest. This is a Bison team under Easton Stick that is going to try to run the ball anywhere between 45 and 50 and even 61 times. We'll get to that a little bit later as well. But they're going to try and just run the bejesus out of the ball. So being able to effectively throw it, especially out of fake quarterback runs, and that was honestly the coolest one. It was a fake QB power to the left. Easton took two steps towards the line of scrimmage, dropped back, and the safety was smoked. I mean, they had eyes in the backfield. Darius Shepherd, he could have thrown a touchdown to any of three guys. It just happened to be that his first read was also wide open. But that play action game, that fake QB run game, that's important for the rest of the regular season. And after getting a medical update on Carson Wentz on Monday at the press conference, it's going to be for sure Easton Stick these last two games. That's a 100% certainty. Wentz isn't even going to see a doctor until the regular season is over. So this is the Easton Stick show, and it's nice to see that he could get it going through the air.
And he got it going through the air for the third consecutive game to his high school teammate, Mr. R.J. Urzendowski. Third straight game with a touchdown catch. I know that you and I were talking off air and we're scoffing a little bit at some media members asking if there's just a special connection between them. Is that why he only throws them the ball from time to time? But it's clear that Easton Stick to R.J. Urzendowski is going to be something that Bison fans are going to have a lot of fun watching here for years to come.
I think it's something that Husker fans wish they maybe had a chance to watch. It's obviously, both of those guys are Omaha natives, and Nebraska's struggling to move the ball through the air. But this is a connection, obviously, that was very apparent in high school. In fact, as Bison Nation got so excited for Easton's arrival, a lot of what they saw were YouTube clips of Easton just heaving the ball downfield in the general direction of R.J. Urzendowski and those two guys figuring out. And quite frankly, it's impressive. I mean, this is three straight games, and these two guys have combined for four passing touchdowns. And that's very, very impressive. Whether they went to high school or not, those two having a chemistry is important, especially, obviously, next year, Carson Wentz to be the starting quarterback of the New York Jets, and obviously it's going to be Easton's team next year and for the next 3 years, and those two are going to be important parts of the program for the foreseeable future, and it's really, really fun to watch them already be so good together.
And just another huge momentum-shifting play, Ross, was obviously early in the first quarter there. Zach Rock goes up and over the Western Illinois defender, pulls it over his back for the touchdown. What was that scene like in the Fargo Dome there early on? I can't imagine what it could have been like live.
Well, it was interesting. After the game, we found out that was a check at the line. They figured something out in coverage. And as we all saw, that guy trying to defend Vra had a 58 on the back of his jersey, which is suboptimal, to say the least. My reaction live was something along the lines of, oh my God. Because when he went for the attempt, it was on the far side of the field, and you couldn't really tell if he came down with it. But once his feet hit the ground and he held the ball out towards the pylon and kind of sidestepped his way into the end zone, it was a super delayed reaction because the entire crowd took half of a second to process what had just occurred. And then, as soon as they put it up on the video board, everybody knew. In fact, I think I tweeted out from the NDSU on Scout Twitter account that it was a Sports Center worthy catch. And then, you go home and flip on the 10 p.m. Sports Center, and there it is right at number three. Obviously, a huge social media moment for the program and for Vra himself. Bleacher Report picked it up. Sports Illustrated's feed picked it up. ESPN picked it up, obviously, as did Sports Center. Everybody saw it, and it reminds a lot of people of that Alabama catch where the guy jumped up and pinned it against the helmet and went into the end zone. But this was almost more impressive because it was such a clean pick. He went over the linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't pin it against anything. He just caught it, brought it back, and then kind of trotted into the end zone. Obviously, I think part of that is a backup strong side linebacker trying to cover Zach Vra and not really knowing what he's doing in pass coverage, but I'm going to be the last guy to discredit that play at all, because that was extremely impressive and something, to be honest with you, we'll see on highlight reels of NDSU football for years to come, especially with the pretty new helmet on.
Oh my gosh, how can we just get a little sidebar? How pretty did those look out on the field? I saw them matched up with the uniforms via social media, and they looked prime.
They were cool. It was weird though, I'm not going to lie. Thunderstruck hits, those guys fire out of the tunnel. It's odd not seeing 80 shiny yellow helmets blast through there. But as we discussed on the preview podcast, just a really nice job by the NDSU equipment staff. The matte green finish was a nice touch. The wheat spike really, I think, took the cake and was the cherry on top because of, you know, how it used graphics from the university seal, how it paid homage to the agricultural roots of the area. It just was a really nice touch, and you know, they were fantastic. Jeff Kopak of the Forum asked Coach Kleiman after the game if they're ever going to do it again, and apparently Carson Wentz said that if he ever gets to play again, they're wearing those damn green helmets. So you might see the Harvest helmets in the playoffs if QB1 gets his way.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, that's funny. You know, we have to go back to the rushing attack here, but we have to start here with your guy, Mr. Bruce Anderson. Talk about your favorite player in the Bison program.
It's that might be a little bit of a stretch, but you know, I've just been so impressed with what Bruce has been able to do as far as, you know, kind of limited touches. But today he was second on the team in rushing, and surprise, surprise, you know, led the running backs in yards per carry at 6.8. He just has another gear that the rest of the backs don't have. Granted, he's not going to be able to grind out inside yardage like a King Frazier is. There are certainly reasons to use King. But I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Bruce Anderson's the most talented tailback on the team. As he gets healthier and healthier, if you're a Bison fan, I think you've only got to want to see more and more of number 42. Against Western, Bruce was 1 yard short of his first 100-yard gain and also a yard short of scoring a touchdown as well, but he was electric all day. Because of the lopsided score, he actually was inserted in some situations where you'd normally see King, so he got to run a little bit of ISO inside. He got to run a little bit of power inside. It wasn't just the perimeter stuff where they use his speed to get him to the edge, but you know, obviously that stuff was effective as well, and Bruce is an exciting, exciting player and one that you, or I at least, want to see get more and more carries as the season goes on.
Yeah, no kidding, considering, again, you may deny it. You may deny it, Ross, but he is one of your favorite players in this entire program. Anyways, let's stick with the Bison rushing attack. Anytime you're up so many points early on in the game, you're going to have a lot of rushing attempts. The Bison rushed for 61 times for 331 yards and 3 touchdowns. Just another dominating performance on the ground, especially when the game got out of hand.
For sure, and obviously, you know, it's easy to say, well, it was 59-7. Of course they're going to run the ball, but you and I both know that that's the modus operandi no matter what's going on. I mean, this Bison team, ever since the loss of Carson Wentz, has run the ball, maybe exclusively is not the right word, but when you look at 21 passing attempts against 61 rushing attempts, exclusive becomes, you know, something that you can say. And 9 different Bison got to carry the ball on Saturday. I'm not sure, you know, how often you see that. In fact, only one guy, and that's one of the leaders of the team, Chase Morlock, was the only guy to carry it just once. So everybody got to touch it, and boy, those Rams really established the line of scrimmage, and by the second half, it was pretty clear that Western Illinois defensive front, you know, quit's a strong word, but they were beaten. They knew they were beaten, and they were getting absolutely tossed around. These guys were running through some holes for sure.
One team that wasn't running through any holes on Saturday, Ross, that'd be the Western Illinois offense. 16 carries, 33 yards, 2.1 yards per carry. Obviously, you're down so much early on that you're forced to pass the ball, but a guy like Nico Watson, someone that we talked about in the preview podcast, 4 carries, 1 yard. There was just nowhere to go, so many 3-and-outs, the Bison offense rolling. Western Illinois couldn't get anything going.
No, they really couldn't, and that was from, you know, the outset of the game, far before it was a blowout of any kind. They just couldn't get their guy going, and I kind of said that in the preview is, yeah, Nico Watson is the second leading rusher in the Valley. That's fine, but he's not the kind of running back that you want running into, you know, Nick DeLuca, to be honest with you. he's 6'1", 250, kind of a lumbering guy, and some of the smaller linebackers or weaker defensive fronts in the conference are going to have an issue with him. But like I said, when NDSU only has to fit the one run and not stress quarterback at all, I kind of don't care who your tailback is unless it's David Johnson. I mean, he's really been the only one to cause huge problems for this Bison run defense for teams that don't have the threat of the QB. And right now, David Johnson plays for the Arizona Cardinals, so that's
right.
It's possibly a smaller problem, you know, than you might see. Really, the only tailbacks that have done a lot of damage to NDSU are guys with running mates that are mobile quarterbacks, guys who you've got one or two Bison defenders keying on the quarterback and the running back gets loose. But these conventional rushing attacks just aren't going to work against this cold green defense, and especially a guy who's, you know, 250 pounds. It was a bad matchup, and I wasn't expecting 1 yard on four carries, but, you know, you go back and check the tape, I wasn't expecting much.
Yeah, I encourage people to do so, as Ross is a man of his word. Another guy I feel like we talk about every time we do a breakdown podcast here, Ross, is C.J. Smith, and that's because he's always making big plays, and he forced another turnover this past Saturday.
Yeah, C.J. made another impressive play, did not record an interception on Saturday, but was able to force another turnover. He's always doing that. He's always around the ball. He allowed a little 7-yard comeback in front of him and then promptly grabbed the ball, stripped it out, and one of the other Bison defenders, it was either Robbie Grimsley or M.J. Stumpf, I can't remember, just right off the top of my head, recovered, and it was Bison ball. At that point, it was 14-0. The game was technically, I guess, still in question, but C.J. ripped the ball out. The Bison went 8 or 12 yards, bogged down, and kicked the field goal, but at that point it was 17-0. There was still a lot of time left in the first quarter, and the blowout was on. I'm actually going to sit down and have a chat with C.J. Smith tomorrow for an article that I'm writing later on in the week. We'll discuss that a little bit later, but I tell you what, I'm gonna start this C.J. Smith All-American campaign if I have to do it myself.
I think you could get Bison Nation behind you pretty quickly, so I don't think you have to worry about that too much. When I was rewatching the tape yesterday, Ross, another guy that stood out to me, and he's playing well at an extremely high level, is Mr. Nick DeLuca. He is everywhere. And, again, he led the team in tackles, second straight game, had a sack. What do you think it is about DeLuca's play that's really had a light bulb go on for him?
Well, he's just become more of a leader, and I know that's super cliche, but I did write an article about Nick last week, and the middle linebacker of a Tampa 2, and that's kind of sort of what Gus Bradley and those guys back in the beginning of this whole thing installed, and it is a cover 2 defense with 4-3 principles. That middle linebacker is in charge of a lot of stuff. He's got to set the blitz as far as the defensive linemen are concerned, where they're fitting either pass rush-wise or run-wise. He's got to communicate with his linebacker buddies, and he's got to get the secondary on the same page with what the front seven's doing so they can make their calls. There's a lot of stuff that has to go on from the middle linebacker position, especially against the no-huddle attack. Coach Kleiman mentioned this game against Youngstown State is going to be the fourth consecutive game against the no-huddle attack, and DeLuca's really taken on that leadership role and done it well. As far as why he's succeeding so well, he's just an athletic specimen. WDAY's Dom Izzo asked Coach Kleiman flat out where he felt he was. Dropped names like Travis Beck, Grant Olson, Carlton Littlejohn, and said, where is Nick athletically and ability-wise? And he said, look, Nick is probably the best I've ever worked with, and I would put him there with Carlton Littlejohn. But he's got 25 pounds on LJ. What he doesn't say is he also has 3 inches on LJ. Carlton Littlejohn was a 6-foot, 210-pound linebacker that was effective enough at North Dakota State to get a Minnesota Vikings training camp invite. And, this is a guy that Kleiman puts in that same class that is 25 pounds heavier and 3 inches taller, but moves like Carlton Littlejohn. So that's what the Bison have in the middle right now on Nick DeLuca, and it's been extremely impressive. He led the team in tackles again, completely shut down Watson, and also had a sack on a really awesomely timed blitz where MJ Stumpf went from the weak side and kind of took the pass protector, and then DeLuca came in absolutely untouched and just erased Trenton Norvell and bogged down yet another Western drive.
Absolutely. And going from one of the leaders of this defense to one of the newcomers, you had a phenomenal article up on the BisonReport.com website today about Mr. Robbie Grimsley, obviously Minnesota's 2014 Mr. Football. He had to play early on in the Montana game, a true freshman being thrown in national television. It's a tough spot, but he's someone who's absolutely came to play. He's showing why he was Mr. Football for Minnesota last season. Can you tell us a little bit about the article? And then, what have your thoughts been on Robbie these last few games?
Yeah, absolutely. So, obviously, when, the season started, no one was sure who was and wasn't going to redshirt. And then you flip on ESPN in that opening game weekend and you see 35 and you think to yourself, well, that number 35 is quite a bit taller than Christian Dudzik, so who the hell is this? Well, it was Robbie Grimsley. And I knew, and so did a lot of, more educated Bison fans, that this kid was a true freshman playing on national television at free safety for the Bison. Now, with the camera that we were given, I wasn't made aware of this until the Weber State game at home. But what the Bison were doing was a rotation based on personnel on every play. So what happened was before the snap, Chris Board and Robbie Grimsley would look at each other and be real close to the sideline. And then Jalen Allison and Pierre G. Tucker would look at each other and be real close to the sideline. Wait for the call from Entz based on the personnel that was coming in and make a switch. If it was, 21 personnel or 22 personnel where you've got two running backs in there and a tight end, two running backs in there and two tight ends, Chris Board would come in and play strong safety, and Pierre G. Tucker would stay in, and they'd be in a 4-3 base with Board as the strong safety. The nickel safety was Grimsley, so he was covering the pass. But the problem with that situation was defending the no huddle. It's extremely difficult to make these calls when you're Coach Entz, when you don't even know what kids you're going to have out there, and then if other teams are trying to go hurry up and hurry up and hurry up, and you're deciding whether you are or aren't going to substitute, it just put the team in a difficult spot. What ended up happening was, in addition to Robbie Grimsley's excellent play, Chris Board struggled in some spots, especially, coverage-wise. And he's such a, cruise missile of a guy at 6'1" and 220 pounds. They just moved him to linebacker, which is, we just talked about Carlton Littlejohn, who was 6 feet tall, 210. I mean, Chris Board has plenty of size to be a Bison linebacker. Honestly, with his frame, he could put on 10 to 12 more pounds. It wouldn't be an issue. And this locked in the Trey Dempsey-Robbie Grimsley defensive backfield. And now as a true freshman, Robbie Grimsley's just starting strong safety, and he's playing exceptionally well. Obviously, only carrying 181 pounds is not ideal for a strong safety. You'd like to see him put on some weight. But as you and I just discussed, there's been absolutely no drop-off in the run defense whatsoever. He's been very, very effective covering his keys in the run game. He hasn't allowed a completion over 20 yards in his area. The entire coverage units have improved because Allison, Champion, Smith, Grimsley, and Dempsey know that in passing situations, they are the five guys. They've established the ability to communicate with each other, and everything just seems to be much more on the same page. So that's how it affects everything from an X's and O's perspective, but just strictly from Robbie's perspective, I mean, he is playing really, really well, and I'm not even going to use the caveat for a freshman. He's just playing well, and I and the rest of Bison Nation have been very impressed. But that's enough of the hardcore football X's and O's breakdown. Ryan, give us the football recruiting update, and then we'll talk a little Bison Hoops recruiting, as it is National Signing Day for the early period tomorrow.
Yeah, I wish I had more good news on the football team with so much success from last weekend, but it looks like NDSU could be losing a couple commits here in the near future, starting with tight end commit Sean Bayer. He picked up a Nebraska offer late last week, and he told me that night that he set up an unofficial visit to see Nebraska at the end of the month, and I would anticipate this isn't the last offer that he's going to get from a Power 5 school. I could see Iowa State jumping in here soon as well. And with the kid being from Iowa, you know, Nebraska is a very, you know, it's a Big Ten offer, and he's someone that I know had aspirations of playing at an FBS level before committing to NDSU. So it'll be interesting to see how things progress, but at this point in time, I don't see Sean Bayer. I think he flips to Nebraska here in early December or January or wherever he goes, but unfortunately I don't see him being a part of this NDSU 2016 class. Another guy who picked up FBS offer was Cameron Hackle, someone who just committed to the Bison here just 8 days ago. He picked up an offer from Army. He does plan on taking a visit out there. So again, that's another one to monitor here as things progress. And the last guy I'll talk about again is Cole Keefe, the defensive end commit from Iowa. He's someone that Minnesota really is on board with. They're just waiting to see if they're going to be there long-term as their contracts expire before signing day. And with the Gophers lost two straight games in a row, it'll be interesting to see what happens. But if Minnesota does get the vote of confidence from the athletic department, I expect Co to get an offer from Minnesota as a tight end, not defensive end, which he's committed to NDSU as. And if that's the case, I think Co will flip to Minnesota here very quickly. So unfortunately, with you know the great talent evaluation that NDSU has, and obviously it's shown as there's multiple guys in the NFL now, other teams take a look at the commitment list, see what NDSU has, and see if they can help their team as well, teams like Nebraska. So, you know, it's good and the bad, but it is what it is, Ross. So hopefully I'll have some more positive news here going into next week, but I don't anticipate any official visitors coming up this weekend from what I've been told. I expect a lot of local 2017 kids from the North Dakota area to be around for the game and maybe some tight end targets as the staff is trying to replace Sean Bayer, knowing that he's likely out. So we will have to see. Yeah, and as you said, just about the basketball side of things, the early signing period starts tomorrow, and I believe 7 a.m. for whatever time period these kids are, but I anticipate NDSU signing two guys that they've had committed for a long time here, and Minnesota shooter Seth Cota and the Midwest point guard Mr. Cameron Hunter. I've texted with both in the last 24 hours, both on planning on signing early on in the day tomorrow morning and faxing in their letters of intent, and obviously then the basketball staff can talk about what each brings to the table. But again, NDSU is a solid recruiting class coming in. Ross, I'd be curious for your thoughts on them, but before we talk about that, how about we talk about, you know, what NDSU is leaving, you know, is with two seniors and Corey Brown and Chris Kading. I mean, what is, you know, with the two seniors, what do you think that these two seniors first can provide to the team this year?
Well, obviously Corey Brown and Chris Kading are the only two seniors on the roster. Coach Richmond made a point to let us all know that this team is 11 out of 15 freshmen and sophomores. So this Bison program's going to lose two guys this year and two guys next year. That's it. There's only two scholarships to fill this year, and as you mentioned, they've both been filled for a very long time. As far as Corey Brown and Chris Kading are concerned as players, to be honest with you, that's very, very defensive-oriented right there. Corey Brown is without question the best perimeter defender on the Bison, and I haven't seen enough of Dylan Miller or Dang Gu to say that they're better interior defenders than Chris Kading is either. Kading's a kid that can knock down a corner three as well, despite usually playing the five in the Bison offense. He's just a very useful player. He's not going to go and get you 20 and 10. That's just not the type of player that he is. But he's an exceptional interior defender, a good team leader, and a guy who can knock down a jump shot for sure. But that's the number one thing that I would say that these two are going to be leaving this Bison program with is some holes to fill on defense, because the wing stopper for this team for the last 3 years has been Corey Brown. And when he's gone, it'll be interesting to see who on this Bison team guards the opposition's best player on the perimeter. That is for sure. Ryan, give me your Seth Cota and Cameron Hunter scouting reports real quick, and then I'll talk about where they might fit in on the 2016-2017 Bison.
Absolutely. I think Seth is a guy who can come in and play right away just because of his shooting ability. He's one of the best knockdown shooters in the state of Minnesota, and that's been well known. He was a guy that was picking up interest from like a Wisconsin-Green Bay, Wisconsin-Milwaukee. They were in early on in the process, and he was someone who I believe led the state of Minnesota in three-point percentage last season, as it was well over 50%. He's someone that's been trying to evolve his game more and more throughout the AAU season. He's been trying to be more aggressive and taking it to the hole, trying to create more contact, and trying to prove to everyone that he's more than just a knockdown shooter. Again, I think early on in his Bison career, I think he'll be coming out, getting minutes as that knockdown shooter, someone to space the floor for this NDSU team. I think Cameron is a guy who is probably a little bit more under the radar just because there's not a lot of film out on him. He's someone that did play in the AAU circuit, and that's where the staff found out about him and eventually got him on an official visit, offered him while on the visit, and it was a done deal soon after. But I think he's a guy, you know, he's a bigger point guard, 6'2", and he's someone I think that can be, you know, creating mismatches, someone who I think could be a lockdown defender for the point guard and shooting guard position. He has the versatility there. But enough about, you know, enough about me. Where do you think that these two guys can fit into this Bison team?
Well, it'll be interesting. You know, they're both guards, and that's really where NDSU is heavy right now. I was extremely impressed, and I'll give some observations, too, about what I saw in the exhibition game against Mary. But I was extremely impressed with Kai Cabellis, and that was the first thing that Coach Richmond said at his press conference on Monday was, I don't even know the answer about the rest of the freshmen, but I'll tell you this, Kai Cabellis is going to play. Against Mary, he was the first guard off the bench, and I will anticipate him being the backup point guard for the rest of the year. And so it's interesting where specifically Cameron Hunter might fit in. And the reason that I say that is because of how point guard heavy this Bison roster is. Paul Miller, who's starting at the two because he's 6'4" and has an absolutely gorgeous jump shot, came in as a point guard recruit. Carlin Dupree obviously came in as a point guard. And then Kai Cabellis is the backup point guard. He's a one as well. These are all guys who can really handle the ball. So where Cameron finds playing time as a fourth ball handler next year is maybe unlikely. So unless he's a lockdown defender in the mold of Corey Brown, I think it's entirely possible you might see Cameron Hunter redshirt his freshman year and then try and be kind of the point guard of the future after the Carlin Dupree era, I guess, or the Carlin Dupree-Paul Miller time frame. Carlin is a true junior, so if Cameron did redshirt his first year where he'd be able to play, Carlin Dupree would actually be exiting the program. So that's kind of my long-term look at Cameron. But outside of Paul Miller, you know, Seth Cota might step on campus and be the second-best shooter on the team. A.J. Jacobson's a very good outside shooter. He's efficient, mostly in the catch-and-shoot game where you see, you know, Paul has that ability to pull up. Lawrence Alexander obviously had that ability to pull up. He did that all season long. But as far as just a spot-up shooter is concerned, I absolutely could see minutes for Seth Cota coming right out of the bench, maybe in a slightly more athletic, like Mike Felt mold. And that might be a little bit before your time covering the Bison, but Mike Felt was part of that Taylor Braun, Jordan Auberg, Trayvon Wright group that gave them a ton of minutes early on in his career and would come out absolutely just firing from three. He's a very good three-point shooter, and I think Seth might be a little bit better athlete, but that could be the role that he fills, and I'm not convinced he redshirts. I think there's a decent chance he might come in and contribute right away.
Absolutely, and how about you know, as we wrap things up here, what do you have coming up for your latest and greatest pieces here on the Bison Report this week?
Well, like I said, I was at the exhibition game against UMary at the Shields Arena there. Got to see some stuff Got to see basically every player on the roster. I was very impressed with Dang Gu and his athleticism. I saw him absolutely just drain a three. It didn't even hit the rim. I didn't know he had face-up game like that. I didn't know he had range like that. I guarantee you either he or Dylan Miller is going to play right away. Dylan Miller looks like a man. I mean, he is 6'8", 240, with a better beard than I can grow at 18 years old. And, I mean, he's the most ready to play. Dang is probably the most talented kid on the whole roster. Common wisdom, I guess, would say then you redshirt Dang and you play Dylan. But I don't know if maybe you can't always – yeah, you owe it to the seniors to put the best team on the floor too. So
it's going to be a tough decision.
It is. It really is. And so I was very impressed with Dang. I was very impressed with Dylan Miller, especially physically. You can definitely tell that Spencer Eliason found the weight room. He's quite a bit thicker than he was last year when he was redshirting. He'll be one of the bigs that comes right off the bench, especially as Chris Kading heals and they kind of bring him along slowly. But the guy that I was, and this is probably, you know, you want to talk about Bruce Anderson being my guy. I don't think I've had more of a my guy than Paul Miller. He took three dribbles and a jump shot last year in the exhibition game before the season started, and I turned to my buddy, I said, "That's my guy. That's my guy, Paul Miller." And he was the first guard off the bench last year. He's going to be the starting two guard this year, and he is going to fill it up. I promise you that. I said early on, especially in the preview, that I almost guaranteed he would be the second leading scorer behind Jacobson. I'm not convinced that AJ can score more than Paul this year. We'll see how that goes going forward. As far as what's coming up this week on Bison Report, I'm going to have a quick sit-down interview with both cornerback CJ Smith and head coach David Richmond of the basketball team tomorrow. I'm going to talk to CJ a little bit about following in Marcus Williams' footsteps, a little bit of X's and O's as far as shadowing receivers, not shadowing receivers, man zone, stuff like that, and just how his senior season's been going, and talk a little bit, too, about his knee rehab over the summer and missing that Montana game and coming back as strongly and impressively as he has. And then I'm going to talk to Coach Richmond a little bit about this concept of positionless basketball. You know, with the new defensive rule changes and how many fouls he anticipates being called, I kind of accused him of running a four-guard lineup when he and I talked in the preseason. He laughed, but really, one through four, every Bison on the team can handle the ball. And when you consider that Dexter Werner is 6 feet, 6 inches tall, and he could be starting at the five against Cal Poly, I mean, you got five guys out there that can move. And nobody over 6 feet, 7 inches tall. You're running two point guards with both Paul and Carlin. It's this ball-dominant basketball that's becoming, you know, more and more interesting and more utilized, even in the NBA. You know, NBA geeks will call it the pace and space era, but David Richmond and his staff is really embracing, you know, this new wave of basketball, and I'm excited about it, and I'm excited to talk to him about it tomorrow. So that's all I've got for you today, Ryan. We'll be back this week with a Cal Davis preview for the basketball team and a Youngstown preview for the football team. Ryan, can you take us out of here?
Absolutely. Again, if you want to support what Ross and I do, I encourage you to go to BisonReport.com, and if you really do truly want to support both of us, you know, you can subscribe. It's less than $5 a month or less than $45 a year for the best Bison recruiting / basketball / football news on the web. Ross does a fantastic job covering both the football and basketball teams, and I can take you home on the recruiting side of things as well. So when, you know, again, we thank you guys for listening. We are now on iTunes and Stitcher as well, so you can follow that up. You can search for Bison Report Radio on iTunes or Stitcher and subscribe to the podcast there. It's also going to be in the links for the store that comes out, which is probably how you obviously found the podcast to begin with. So a lot easier to just subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. But again, we thank you guys for listening. We thank you guys for all the support you've given the Bison Report here through the first 4 or 5 months or so. And so, again, we thank you very much. And we'll talk to you guys a little bit later this week. Go Bucks.